Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. You want to have some fun?
Yeah, we want to have fun.
Okay, are you ready? Sing along now.
My name is Stanley Bookman, and I come from the world of ink. I live in a town called Storyville that's closer than you think. Just hop online and you will find my online world of fun. There's stories, poems, and features on everything under the sun. Just type in storiesforchildrenmagazine.org to the end. Come join me in reading adventures, we're sure to become good friends. So come to the world of ink with me, we'll share a story or two. We'll go all over the world, you'll see, we'll have fun the whole day through.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Stories for Children show.
Yeah, and of course, sound in the back.
Yes, and we already have Sabrina in the background entertaining.
It works for this show.
It does work for this show. So we're doing a special edition of the Stories for Children show. Normally we have it.
Okay.
We normally have it on Mondays, but we're doing it on a Thursday because it's not our typical show. We're not actually bringing an author on or an illustrator on to just talk about their books. We're actually sharing tips, which is one reason why we don't have it on Monday, and then also just because scheduling-wise, Thursday just worked out, so that's why it's a special edition. Obviously, it's September 20th, and for all those who don't know, tomorrow's my birthday. So
yeah, I was going to say it. I can't say it now.
Yes, tomorrow's my birthday. I'm getting older. I'm pushing 40 now. Isn't that sad? So sad. Marcia even mentioned that. She's like, Virginia, you really need to mention how old you're getting because a lot of people think you're younger than you are or way older than you are. So, yes, I'm pushing 40. And she is not going to stop, is she?
Right. All right. So, anyway, happy birthday. We got a really great show today. We are going to talk about whatever our guest would like to talk about because, he's got a lot going on. So,
yeah. I want to kind of talk about that a little bit. So how I found our guest, and his name's Mikey Brooks. Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
She's asking for a Band-Aid if anybody wants to know what she's whining about in the background. It's a Band-Aid.
Well, give her a Band-Aid, and then
I am. I'm getting her a Band-Aid. I have to walk through my whole house. Well, we're both on a couple of writing groups out there in Facebook world, and I think it was Authors Think Tank, and Mike, you can, of course, correct me on that, but I think it was Authors Think Tank was the group. Anyways, we had a fellow author ask about, picture books and kind of marketing and writing them and getting agents and getting published and stuff. And so we kind of popped on there. And Mikey mentioned that because he illustrates and is also starting to write within that genre, how he has a list of do's and don't type tips that he would share. I was like, wow, a lot of people think writing picture books or illustrating picture books or marketing picture books and everything involving picture books is the easiest thing in everything you can do writing. And it's actually one of the hardest, which Marcia can even back me up on.
Yeah, and how about, let's talk about it with an agent, because I am an agent for 15 years, right?
Yes.
And I know that nobody's getting, I self-publish my books, so what can I tell you?
And picture books are, everything's the easiest things to do, and they're actually the hardest book out of most of the books out there that you can write and market and get published to do. They're very difficult.
It's like impossible.
Yeah.
It's impossible. And no matter how good, it's not about being good. It's not about that at all. It's getting out of that slush pile. And even if you're an agent, they also throw yours in there too because they don't care.
Right.
And the thing is,
and the reason why you get in the slush pile is because everybody tries to write picture books.
Yep.
Because they think it's easiest. So you have more competition, and it's actually the toughest market to be in, especially right now.
Although somebody that can illustrate and write it has a better chance, though.
Right, which is why I wanted Mikey to come on our show, because Mikey Brooks is an illustrator and he's a writer. He has a bachelor's in English, so, he's not, just some schmuck that you know, hasn't actually put some effort into learning and knowing what he's doing. I mean, you know, and he's been, and what I love about having you on the show, Mikey, is the fact that, and you know, Marsh is not tainted, but we have a lot of authors out there that we've had on and illustrators on that have been in this industry for a very long time, as long as Marsh has been in the industry, but they've gotten tainted and they have, you know, they're taboo on what works and what doesn't work, even though the market's changed. And I love it because you've been doing this long enough to where you understand the market, but you're still young enough, like myself, to where you understand that, you know, it's a constant changing environment and you haven't been tainted by it. So we're glad to have you on the show, Mikey. So thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you.
I just want to add one thing. You know what you said? You know, we've had a lot of people on the show lately about, you know, should you self-publish, should you not self-publish, should you get an agent, shouldn't you get an agent? And everybody, they go like, oh, yeah, you should get an agent. Well, that sounds great. But it doesn't happen.
And it's funny you mentioned that because, and I want to say it was actually in the same group, in the author think tank group, is somebody got a contract for their book. And because the contract was, like, you know, over 10 pages long, because most of them are, they're, like, insanely crazy. And there's, like, all this stuff in there that is just complete BS.
That nobody,
and
even
so,
the lawyers don't know how to read it.
Exactly. So she ended up sending out a query letter to a bunch of agents that she had queried before she even got this contract and said, hey, now I have a contract. Would you be interested in looking this over for me? Because I want to make sure that I'm not, you know, screwing myself. And she ended up getting an agent because of her contract. So sometimes it doesn't go agent and then publish. Sometimes it goes publish and then you get an agent.
Well, once you have a contract, an agent says, well, why not? I mean, they don't have to do any work. They have no work to do.
I know. So it's an interesting kind of world that we live in now. So, Mikey, I'd love for you to share a little bit more about who you are, what you do, because you, which I actually love this too, and I told Mikey this actually when we talked on the phone, before doing this show, he also works in a bakery. So besides having this creative side of being able to write and illustrate, he cooks, ladies.
Yeah, you know, I was going to ask you a question before. Well, you know, Mikey, are you on Pinterest?
I am not on Pinterest.
Okay, well, we have to get you on Pinterest. Okay, Virginia, you need to friend him because you know why? Last night I was looking, after I read all the information about you, and then they have a lot of cooking things, and they have a lot of wedding cakes and cakes. And I thought, this is perfect for you to be on there. you do illustrations and you are decorating cakes. I mean, you'll be surprised when you go in there how many people will probably look at your work because you got a lot going on that they will be looking at.
Thank you. I will take that into account and check it out. I haven't quite gotten on Pinterest yet. I spend so much time on Facebook.
Go to Pinterest. Because Virginia and I are putting a lot on there lately.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I've listened to 3 webinars and a 4th one I just on videos with that. And honestly, I really truly believe that can do, this is where there's readers and Facebook
and
writers.
I want to say, and Pinterest, you can filter it into your Facebook, which is what we do as well, so.
Oh,
lately,
well, there
everybody's
we go.
Whining.
Yeah,
all
there
whining. They all whine on Facebook. Everybody wants to sell books on Facebook, and they're not. So they're all whining, and everybody, I can't even, I'm looking through everything. That's what they do. And, you know, like, you're just, you know, you're younger, right? And, you know, and like Virginia is saying, like, I've been doing this for a long time, and the thing is you can't give up, and you just have to keep going. And you can't keep whining because nobody wants to hear the whining, and that is all everybody's doing. Go on Pinterest, and then people are actually looking at what you do.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, no, you'll fit in. I was looking at the cakes. I'm going because it's actually like a viral spa. People go in a lot and just kind of look around. Virginia, don't you find it interesting?
Yeah,
I find
I'm just laughing, Marcy, because you're like pushing Pinterest.
Because
I
know how long it took me. You know how long it took you to get on there.
I know.
On there. I think that's where the readers are.
Just so our listeners know, and then we'll have Mikey share more about himself. Pinterest takes less time than Facebook or Twitter does, so it doesn't eat up as much of your day.
Because spending time on Facebook isn't helping anybody anymore. It did. It gets you to meet people, but not sell anything.
Yeah.
You get a lot of likes. You get a lot of likes.
Yeah. All right. So Marshall, let Mikey share about himself.
I am. But it just reminded me because he belongs on there.
All right. Well, I will get on to Pinterest.
Okay.
I'll add that to the other social media sites that I affiliate with. But yeah, I do bake. I decorate. I love to decorate. It's fun. I do that as my full-time job, where I manage a bakery. And aside from being a daddy of two little girls that take up a lot of my time, I write and I draw. And I have that. They're a lot of inspiration to me, and they help me with a lot of my stuff. They help me with my painting and my drawing and coming up with the stories. It's quite fun.
Yep. And do you want to give your website in case people want to look
website,
at it?
Your website, Mikey.
Yeah.
Yes, I have a website. I have a blog right now. It's written by mikey.blogspot.com. And I also have mikeybrooks.net, which will be launching probably within the next month. We're just finishing up stuff with my web designer, but it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I mean, you are very talented.
Very talented.
MikeyBrooks.net, although it's more geared toward, I'm carrying this website toward younger readers, illustrators, and writers, because I really feel strong about teaching younger kids to write and to be able to learn those important steps and stuff in reading and writing and having the craft with the art and stuff. And so that's why that MikeyBrooks.net is geared toward kids, and then it has a link to the blog, which is more geared toward adult writers and those more experienced with writing.
That's good, and I love that. And just so our listeners know, too, Mikey's a fellow Utahn like I am, but he's toward the Salt Lake Valley, so he's hours ahead above me north.
I'm in the valley. We will probably never leave the valley.
that's where Craig Clyde lives.
Where Craig Clyde is, yeah. See, Marcia and I know a lot of Utahns up that way. I'm like, I don't want them a loner down here. I mean, I know a lot of, obviously, writers and illustrators down here in southern Utah, but it seems like most of you guys are all up north.
Well, that's for more. There's a lot of action going on there, I think.
Oh yeah, it's a very artsy area actually of Utah, and I'm sure Mikey can tell you that because there's always events going on like every weekend
something all the time. Theater. I did community theater for a while. Because when I first started going to school after I graduated high school, I was way into theater and got a theater scholarship, and so I did a lot of theater. I don't do too much theater anymore. I kind of transitioned over into the artistic side. I used to paint the sets. I've done some murals for some of the shows that we've done at the community center and stuff.
Have you thought of writing a children's movie at all?
I haven't thought about writing a children's movie.
Actually, if you were an actor, and because that, that's the hardest thing to write, and I get almost none. I really to come into the office. Everybody, not very few people venture out to do that.
Yeah, I've never thought about that, but it would be
maybe
fun
you should.
To do.
Yeah, I think you should.
Maybe I should.
Yeah, I think you should because you're very talented, and I think you could probably vision it and write it.
Yeah, especially since you know, being on stage.
And you don't have to worry about the animation. Just write the story, and then they animate it if they like the idea.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so I'll talk to you about that another time. But I was thinking while you're talking about that, because if you're in theater, that would really work for you, I think, something like that.
I think it kind of helps to learn how to write a story out. I think it helps because I know how, as an actor, you have to learn a certain your part in the story to actually be able to share it, and I think that helps a lot with creating a storyline.
Yeah, it does.
Knowing.
I'm a scriptwriter, so when I became a scriptwriter, I got better at my writing skills because you really have to see it.
Yes, you do.
And that works. That's what I was thinking for you.
I think that's partly maybe why Mikey does so well within the picture book market, because And I mean, yes, I do say that
right.
A little bit
Decisions
with
right
a grain
now,
of salt. It's not like Mike has like a bazillion books out there published, but you know, but the reason why you're in that particular genre, and I think that's probably what you're focusing on, because it is a very visual market to be in, and you
yes,
know,
it is.
And I think sometimes, and I get asked this question a lot because you know, I have a picture book, and it's actually won a Mom's Choice Award. And I was very fortunate because the illustrator I worked with is Kevin Scott Collier, and he, you know, I've known him back when he first started getting his illustrating career going, and it was back when I was getting, you know, into the writing part of this crazy business. And so we kind of met each other on the onset of our careers and, you know, have basically supported each other and stuff. So I had a really good established working relationship. So when I went to go do my picture book and he just, you know, agreed to be the illustrator, I was very fortunate as an author because I had somebody that I knew personally that I could just, you know, get on email or call up and say, hey, what do you think of this? Or, you know, he could say, are you crazy? I think I mentioned this to Mikey actually when we were talking is I had a scene in my book where my character Sugar Paw spilled paint on the living room carpet, but I had it as red paint on white carpet. And the first thing out of Kevin's mouth when he read my manuscript was like, I can't believe no one caught this, but that's going to look like blood in the illustration. And he's like, can we change this? Can I make this like multiple colors and I make the carpet like a pale yellow or like an ivory or something?
No,
so
no,
it
it's true
look...
because you sometimes you don't see what see certain
no,
things.
No, I
as
didn't.
As an illustrator, like
and
Mikey is, he sees it when he's writing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and I think that's, and that's why I wanted Mikey on the show so much because it's like, it made me realize right then and there, and I mean, I was already published. I'd already had quite a lot of things published in short story, and there is a huge difference between short story writing and picture book writing because in short story you don't have as many illustrations, so you have to have more detail.
Right.
So I did have to learn to cut out a lot of that detail and with the illustration, you know, show that part of the storyline. So it was still challenging to write my picture book, but not as much as if I had started writing novels or was just a beginning writer and didn't understand that relationship. So it wasn't a huge hurdle for me to jump. But a lot of, I think, authors have a hard time because they're not, I don't want to say they're not visual because they are visual, but not visual like an illustrator is. And so we picture, I think, things in our head a little bit differently than...
That's why you can't get published because the editors... They don't see what you are seeing, and someone like Mikey has a better chance because he is actually seeing what he's writing, and he is the illustrator. They don't want you to send pictures or any illustrations if you're just sending as an author, and because they'll pick their own illustrator. But in Mikey's case, that is the best of both worlds because he sees it, and then I feel like a lot of people don't get their books published, not because they're not good. I think the editors can't vision what they see, what they're reading.
Right.
And
I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So what are some tips, Mikey, that authors can do to help conquer that? Because it's very challenging.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this was a tip that kind of helps me. If I'm having a hard time envisioning it, like the storyline, I'll actually try to storyboard it. A lot of times in film, Pixar is, you know, huge right now. And if you ever watch one of their making of the films, they actually show you how they storyboard everything before they actually go to the actual production of making the film. And what they do is scene by scene drawing, like just sketch drawings of what's going on. And I think if you were to take your storyline that you want to do and storyboard it out, even if you're doing it with stick figures, you're more capable of then describing what's going on and having more of a visual of what's going on in that story. Does that make sense?
That's why you should probably try to write a script because that's what you're doing.
That's
what he's doing because that's what he's doing when he's talking about storyboarding.
Exactly, yes.
That's what you do. I write, like, for each scene, I take, like, sometimes a little index card and write each scene. And that's when I do a script or little notes on the thing. So he's doing it by storyboard because he's the illustrator. So that's
I love that tip. And when I teach basic you know, writing for children and young adults, and I have somebody who's like, well, I want to write picture books. The first thing in my mouth is, you know, it's not just doing storyboard, but to basically do like a mock-up dummy book and to actually lay the text, you know, mm-hmm. even if you can't draw, like I can't even draw stick figures.
No, that's a good idea.
Know, I've told authors, and take your text and, you know, print out your manuscript and cut it and put it on each page where you think the theme would be, because it's true. It will show you, and I love that you said that, because it does. It shows you as an author, if you have too much detail in your text, and you can take more out to tighten it up. It shows if you're not explaining something well enough so the illustrator or the editor isn't going to understand what the heck you're talking about. So I love that, because that's true. Picture books is exactly, you're right. It's like writing a script. It's like, you know, plotting out, you know, a movie scene by scene, because it is a marry between the pictures and the words. And I think people don't realize how difficult that relationship is, and finding that balance is.
I should take my own.
What I found with picture books is that picture books, it's the illustrations that tell the stories to kids. The words are there for the parents who read the story. But the children, they're not interested in the words. They're interested in the story. And it's funny, my 3-year-old can take a book and she will read the book from front to back and read the story to me, because she's not reading any words. She's looking at the pictures and telling me what's going on in the pictures.
Well, that's great.
And so
that's really good.
It's
See,
important.
Yeah, very,
it's important,
very
important that the pictures tell the story.
And I love that you said
that.
That's
a great tip, pictures.
Yeah, and I love that you mentioned that too, because, you know, a lot of parents are jumping picture books because they're thinking, well, I want my kid to read. And they look at, and I always bring this up, that, you know, your baby can read commercial, and it shows, like, the little girl reading Charlotte's Web, and she's, like, 5 years old.
Oh.
And I'm going, and I'm just, and all I'm thinking is, like, but she's not developing her creative side of her brain, because she's reading a novel, and she should be looking at a picture book and learning. And I can talk about this, because my daughter, who's going to be 8 years old soon, she has a really hard time with concepts. And it was because my husband would read books to her, and not picture books, but, you know, like bigger books. And he's not here, so I can say it, so he can't get mad at me. And
is it an encyclopedia to her or something?
No, not encyclopedia, but, you know, like he would read like a chapter book to her, not a middle grade, but like a chapter book to her and stuff. And, I mean, she would kind of look at pictures. I mean, like, if she did look at a picture book, it was Dr. Seuss, which are more like picture storybooks, not a true picture book. Because they're longer and they're, you know, there's usually more text in a picture storybook. So those were the type of books, if it was a picture book, he would read to her. And I've found now as she's gotten older, she has a harder time with concepts because she never really learned to look at pictures and learn to associate what was going on in the picture and then translate that into words to us. And so she has a hard time because we'll tell her stuff and she has a hard time visualizing it and understanding what we're saying sometimes. And I'm like, this is why you don't skip picture books.
No, you can't. That would be very bad if they start doing that.
Yes, and people are. They really are. So I love that, and it's true. You're right. The pictures do tell most of the story, and I 100% agree with that.
Putting those terms, it's a great way to just an easy. That's like editing out everything else when you just say picturing. You know, pictures tell the story. That really helps. Yeah. That's a really good thing.
Yeah. What else have you found with you know, working in the picture book genre, that is another thing that has helped, you know.
Well, another thing that helps is to know exactly, like, a lot of people don't know what a story is. Like, to make a story, I came up with 5 plots that are plot lines for picture books. And if you have a plot line that you're trying to work with, and you have a story idea, then you can see which one it would fit in better. And then it kind of works as a skeleton for you to move from point one to point two to point three to complete your story. Mm-hmm. If you want, I can share the plot lines with you.
Yeah, I would love that.
All right, the first one I call a try and fail. And this is the one that I see in most, like, every picture book. This is where the main character has a problem that needs solving, and they try to solve the problem by themselves, and they fail the first time. And then as the story continues, it's just a series of try and fails. And then toward the end, all their hope is lost. They don't know how to solve the problem. But then they come up with an idea. They try it. It works. And hooray, you know, the story ends with the problem being solved. A great example of this is Caddy Duck makes a friend. It might be Katie Dutch. I pronounce it Catty because it was cooler that way when I was reading it. And my daughter loved this book, but she has a friend. She loves to dance, and she's dancing with her little brother, but her little brother has to go down for his nap, and she still wants to dance, but there's nobody else to dance with except this neighbor boy who doesn't like to dance. He likes things that go fast, like airplanes and cars. And so they just sit around doing nothing because both of them want to do two things that neither of them want to do. And so they try different things, but neither of them are getting it. She finally comes up with the idea to act like an airplane and swirl and dance around like an airplane. And then she says, I love to dance, which she solved her problem by working with the boy to act like an airplane and dance around. And that's how that story ended. And it was, I think it was really well done for that specific try and fail story plot. Another one that's a good example for that is Busy Busy Spider by Kate Toms. That's a good one. The next one is a series of events, and this is a plot that has action of the story to move, like the story moves in a series of events. First this happens, then this, then that. Oh, and then this happens, and then finally at the end it all leads back to the beginning. A great example of this, which probably everybody has read, is the Give a Moose a Muffin or Give a Pig a Pancake or Give a Mouse a Cookie. All those books, they're just a series of events that lead, that keep the character moving in action. You know, and those are fantastic stories to read. So that's a great example.
I was going to say my book, Baby Saint Sugar Paw, is one of those action ones because, you know, he's trying to get rid of his babysitter, and everything that happens is his action to try and basically get her in trouble so she'll never come back again. And then, of course, he learns from that. And then, of course, there's always that hidden moral somewhere, because I think some people, when they write, and that's why I love that you talked about, you know, how you look for the storyline and the plot line, because I think sometimes people think, well, I want to write about, you know, kids not lying. And so they pick the moral, and they don't know where to go after there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, kids pick it up. They don't want to hear that. They want a story. They don't want...
I mean, you can have it in
their head. It could be subtle. It can be very subtle, and then it works with kids because you can't fool them.
Yeah, because that's what happened to my story, because my character, of course, he's lying, and he's doing bad things constantly to get rid of his babysitter, and he realizes at the end that his actions, that he was... you know, it was going to get this person in trouble, and that, you know, he lied. And so at the end, he actually tells his parents what he did and admits his mistakes. You know, so the moral's there, but it's not in your face.
Yeah.
Because if I would have sat down going, oh, I want to have a book about, you know, lying, I mean, you're so focused on, I think, you know, that's exactly what happens. The plot and the storyline isn't there, because they're just so into driving that moral into the kids.
Well, you know what? Because people don't just write a story. Like when I wrote Snack Attack, I write children's books too, you know. And the Snack Attack, I wrote it, and actually it's a very good message now, but I wrote it a while ago, and I put it out now, and, you know, not now, a couple years ago. But the thing is, I didn't write it with a message. It does have a message after the fact. So, you know, I didn't even
eating.
Yeah, but I didn't really think about it that way. I just felt like, you know, this was a subject that kids eat too much candy, and then the mother lets the kid eat as much candy as they want, and naturally he gets sick. And then he says, okay, well, maybe it won't be so bad to eat something good, you know, but most kids like junk, you know. They just like junk food. And if you let them have all they want, what's going to happen? They're all going to get sick. It's Halloween's coming up. You know what happens on Halloween.
Yeah,
they all get sick.
And I was going to say, I think your Snack Attack is also one of those where the plot line is more of an action-based plot line.
Yeah.
Cause it builds.
But I didn't write it that way. You know, I just wrote it to tell the story, but that's what people try to do now. They try to go, like you just said, like, oh, I'll write a book about lying. But it doesn't work out, because then it becomes just you're just drumming things into them that they don't want to hear.
No, I think that is true with any type of writing, whether you're writing a children's book or a middle grade book or a novel. If you say, well, this is what I want my reader to learn from this book, it's never going to work out. You need to tell the story and let the theme present itself to the reader. Going back to plots, next plot that I have is the discovery plot. This is a good example. This would be like Where the Wild Things Are or Green Eggs and Ham. My favorite one to read with my daughter is Just Going to the Dentist, which is one of those critter books.
Oh, I have that one.
The discovery plot is where the main character misunderstands something, or they're confused about something, mm-hmm. or someone, or themselves, and then they kind of have this journey of discovery where they learn as they go what the difference is. In the Just Going to the Dentist, the critter boy has to go to the dentist, but he's scared to go to the dentist, and it's kind of an action-driven one, too, because he has one event after another. But the main thing is that he comes away from the dentist learning that he liked the dentist, wasn't scary, and that's that type of plot line where it changes their perception at the end, the main character's perception. But there's lots of books that do that and do it well. Green Eggs and Ham, Sam's perception of the green eggs and ham is he doesn't want to eat those because they're gross or something, but by the end, his perception has changed that he likes green eggs and ham, and that's a really good example of the discovery plot.
That's good.
They're
really good tips because people go like, oh, all right, if you have it, like, this is one of the reasons we have a show. I should explain this because lately I've noticed that, and Virginia will notice the same thing. We tell people, you know, listen to this show because not particularly our show, like listen to a show about or just pay attention to what other people are, and they don't want to do that, and they're not learning, and then they want to know why they're not getting anywhere. It's because they're not letting their minds open to getting. I don't care how old you are, if you think you've learned everything, you might as well forget it. It's not true.
What I love about the tips you're sharing is you're giving, you know, well, and you'll see this in this book, which shows, which, you know, I learned this back when I took my writing class at the Institute of Children's Literature, was to, whatever genre you want to write in, to go get the books and to read them and then break them down, and you're doing that. I mean, you're showing, you know, Green Eggs and Ham, it's this discovery, you know, type plot line, you did that. You've actually gone through and have broken down these different picture books into what plot lines they fit into.
That's exactly right. You know, when I started writing, I went to the library and I sat down, and if I didn't, I just picked I looked 20, 30 books at a time and just sat there and looked at them and opened them and see what they were about. People don't do that now. They go, oh, I think I'll write a children's book. And then, you know, they look at other books, and then they're copying actually what the other people are doing. They're not thinking themselves because they don't want to think. You have to really think to do picture books. It's not easy.
Yes. And the thing that I tell everybody in my writers group when they ask questions on how to help themselves become a better, you know, writer of children's books, a writer of middle grade or YA, is you need to read those books. If you want to be a picture book writer, go read as many picture books as you can. I am fortunate enough that I have two daughters that I can read a lot of picture books too, so that helps me a lot. But if you don't have kids, or if you're older and your kids have moved out, you know, go to the library and read as many picture books as you can.
Yeah, don't read them online. Go in the library.
Oh, yeah, you've got to hold it and look at the pictures and turn the pages, because that's what kids do, and that's who you're writing it for.
Exactly.
What I do is I go to, and of course I have an excuse to be there more because I have a two-year-old again, but I go to weekly. We have story time at our library, and so I go, and usually they always read picture books because it's younger kids that are there. And I actually go and I watch, and I don't go just to hear the story. I go because I want to watch the kids' reactions.
Because
it helps me see the book through their eyes.
Right.
And it's not just through my own, you know, because I have a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old. I don't just see it through their eyes, or I don't remember back from when I used to read to my 16-year-old, you know, books with him. I mean, I'm actually seeing other kids and how they're reacting, which is so important when you're writing for those ages, you know, it's to really...
Oh, that's really important.
Yeah.
Yes, if you ever want to find out what's not working in your picture book or what's not working in any particular picture book, read it to a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
they will
no,
turn
yeah.
the page before you can finish what is written there.
Right.
And that's when you know that wasn't doing it for them.
Right.
I like what you said about your 3-year-old, that she's telling you the story without reading.
Oh, yeah. And
I think that's great. That's great. That's a really great tip. That one is stuck in my mind, is really something really good to realize with pictures.
Yes, exactly.
Can I just ask you a question before you go?
Yes.
Do you want to illustrate for other people also, or just for yourself?
You know what? I love to illustrate. I would love to illustrate for other people. I actually illustrated a book. Carolyn Quist wrote the book. It's called Ocelot Scott. And that was really fun to write because she sent me the story, and I had no idea what an ocelot was. And so I had to go online and look up what an ocelot was.
Yeah.
And she rhymed a lot of things with ocelot in this story, and I had to look up a lot of them. And it was fun because it was a nice teaching moment for kids, you know, to teach them about this, you know, creature, which is an ocelot, which kind of, I still don't know quite. I know it's a cat, and it's sort of a cross between a leopard and another cat, but it's smaller. It's got spots and stripes, which was kind of fun to do, but... it's fun to learn about other people's storylines. It's kind of hard at first, but I like it. I'm open to illustrating for other people.
Okay, I just wondered if you are. That's good. Virginia, we can put that out.
Yeah. And I'm actually getting stuff and putting it in the jar. That's where I'm going. And be multi-talented today.
No, you know, because these are tips. I mean, you know, we get a lot of people that archive our shows, and this is one that they absolutely need to archive because, and we'll put it out more and more because these are things that we don't really ever discuss, you know, and this is really what people need to hear is when you're writing a story, all the things that need to go in it to make it good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's why I like knowing what the plot structures are because if I'm stumped, like when I'm trying to write the story and I don't know where to go next, I can look back to the plot structure and say, oh, wait, I have to have another try and fail right here, you know? And so you can actually keep it consistent where it's not going all over the place.
Yeah, that's good. These are very good tips, really good.
Mm-hmm.
The next plot is the fairy godmother plot. And this one, everybody should know how it's done because Cinderella is, like, the most overly used fairy tale ever. And this one, you have a main character who wants something, but they can't achieve it on their own. And then suddenly someone appears out of nowhere, and they solve their problem for them. And a good kind of way to put this is that their problem is solved because of their good nature, kind of like a reward for their good behavior. Not so much as in somebody's just going to come in and solve your problems for you. I would hate to read a book to a little kid or to one of my daughters that said, don't worry, all your problems will be solved for you. You know, somebody will appear out of nowhere. Try to write the story in a way that their good nature is what helps solve the problem. The person who helps them saw that they had this quality that they wanted to help them and help fix the problem for them.
I think that's a good tip for every genre.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because everybody wants that. You know, everybody wants it. They might go, oh, you want to snap your fingers and it all works out. But it doesn't always work out. But if it does, it's because you should deserve it, I think, is what you're saying,
yes.
Right? Just because you wanted to deserve it. I write notes all the time. And I think Virginia, I mean, we write notes, and that's why people, you know, listen to our shows a lot because we know what they want. And, like, this is very interesting because no matter how much you write, you still, some of these things are really basic but not been told before, not that I can remember on any of our shows.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, the first plot line that Mikey brought up, you know, where you try and do something and you fail and you try again, I mean, that one I've heard, it's the term that I've heard it under is called the rule of three. And of course the hero's journey, which is, you know, they have the mentor who which we all know, and usually everybody uses Star Wars as the analogy for, you know, you have, you know, your mentor and they help you, kind of guide you, but then they always die, you know, like in Harry Potter, he loses Dumbledore. And so now you have to rise to this challenge and you only have 75% of the information from your mentor, so this last 25% you have to figure out on your own and go forward and you know, of course, succeed as the hero.
Like the Wizard of Oz, kind of. Like
yeah,
the Wizard of Oz.
Right, same thing, Wizard of Oz. Yeah, so, I mean, so those are like the two plot lines most people hear. So I love the fact you're breaking down,
yeah,
you know,
great.
from your research and working on books and from books you've read, these other plot lines, because I think we, you know, those of us who've been in the, at least in the industry for a while, I mean, we know that those other ones are there, but I guess we've never really sat there and have really broke them down and shared, you know, the way you're doing it. Like, well,
oh, it's great. And, this is great.
And I love it because, yeah, I'm realizing, wow, there's more plot lines to picture books than I guess I really thought about before.
No, it's, it's really great advice. Fabulous.
Yeah. I have one more plot line, although it teetered on whether or not I should actually call it the plot line because it kind of crosses over into other ones, but I see it a lot still. And this is what I call the moral lesson, which I've already brought up. But this one is basically the main character is told not to do something, they do it anyway, and then they pay the consequence of that action. I see this a lot with if you have like a religious type picture book, it's trying to teach a moral lesson. The main character wants to do something, so they're told not to, they do it, they face a consequence. One example of this is called Purple, Green, and Yellow. And my daughter loves this book, and I absolutely do not like to read it. In fact, it's actually changed a little bit because there's this girl that wants these coloring markers, and her mom tells her no. And then she says, oh, but there are these coloring markers that wash off. And so her mom gets her these coloring markers. Then it happens three times where she asks for new coloring markers until she gets these coloring markers that do not wash off. And she delivers her stuff all over. And this is the part of the book that I dread because I'm so it's deep dark color on herself. And then the little girl ends up turning invisible. The only way to wash the coloring markers off is turns her invisible. And so that was her consequence of it. But, yeah. That's really why I don't like it.
Yeah,
because
you don't want your kids. You don't want your kids drawing all over everything and thinking it'll come off, and it doesn't.
Yes. That's the one part of the book I dread, and so I kind of change up the story as I'm reading it.
Well, you know, you shouldn't worry too. You shouldn't worry too much about that because I thought about that which I guess again my book based in Sugar Pod would fit into that category as well because he changes. He has a rules chart. And he changes the rules chart. That's like his first idea, of course, to get the space in trouble. Because if he changes the rules chart, and because she's supposed to follow it, and of course now she's doing everything she's not supposed to be doing, she'll get in trouble. And I had a couple of parents when they, you know, that were mommy bloggers when they reviewed the book. They said, you know, I was kind of worried that my kid was going to get this idea, like, oh, I could try this, you know, because, I mean, Sugar Pod has some really bad stuff, which, you know, you would not want your kid doing, and they're like going, all I was thinking is that my kid is going to think, oh, what a great idea. You know, I should try and see if I can get away with it, unlike Sugar Paw. And instead they found us when they're reading the book to their kids were like, he's not very nice.
Well,
so it actually had a reverse
effect. But at the end they realize, no, it's not good. So that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, they do at the end of my book realize that. But I'm just saying, as they were reading, they would look at their parents. I mean, there was a couple of mommy reviewers who said, their kid would turn to him and say, Mom, that wasn't very nice of him. So it was kind of interesting. Like, they were actually, like, saying, you know, what he should have done and what punishments he should have for what he was doing. And
but they're engaging
made them
in the book.
Very happy.
And that is what you want.
Right. So those stories, even though parents fear them, there is that upside that hopefully your kid will do that.
Yeah.
and they do. I think kids are so much smarter than most writers give them credit for. They pick up on so much things.
Yes, they do.
That we just need to remember that they are very intelligent.
Yes. Yeah, right. You know, and that's true. And you can't, you really shouldn't talk down to them. And I don't, I had heard some people say about something, my books, that I don't talk down. Maybe they get that because I don't talk down to kids, because I did work with kids for years. I worked in a pediatric office. I was a, lab tech. But I think that you really have to not talk down to them. I didn't realize that came across, but I guess it did. And in my books, but see, sometimes when you're writing, you don't really think. It's like I don't analyze what I write a lot, and I just try to write the best story I can. And I think that if you try to analyze everything, you'll never write a book, because you'll just keep saying, well, what do they say? And that's what happens. That's what writers get stuck. I'm not saying that I don't do that in my screenplays or other things I write, because I do sometimes. We're normal, We want to, we do the same things that everybody else does. But we don't realize it at the time. But then, if I'm listening to you, I'm going I might have done something like, And that's why it's good for people to listen to people like you that have it all charted out.
Thank you. I think so. I get my information from other people, too.
But that's important, and I love that you said, because it's true. I mean, if we're not sharing information and knowledge with each other, then we can't improve. And, I kid you not, I've talked to authors who've been writing for years, and I'm talking they have, more than 50 books published. And I'll mention something I never thought of that. I'm like, what? You have more books published than, I could dream of, and you didn't think of that? And so, and that's what I love about Marcia earlier. You said, if you don't think you're not always learning, then you're in trouble, because, I mean, I have heard quotes from, I'm a huge Stephen King fan, and I mean, he's been writing forever and has seen rejections before his career got started like crazy, and everybody just looks at him like, wow. And he has quotes where he's like, where he literally says that, I'm constantly learning and growing as an author, So
I think you should. I think that otherwise you shouldn't be doing this, because otherwise you become stale, too. You have to just learn new things. The world is different. I mean, we are in a digital market now, so it is different, even though
I think of writing as kind of like a doctor. A doctor, he's, taking all the medical stuff, but he has to keep up on medical information and the changes in, medicine and all that. Well, otherwise he's a terrible doctor. As long as he keeps up with stuff and he keeps up his training and all that and all the new tests that are going on, then he's a really good doctor. And I think it's the same thing with
that's
writing.
A good idea. That's very good.
And I like that, because my husband, he uses that analogy too about stuff. He's like, that's why they call it a practice.
Right.
Yeah. There you go.
Yes. Unfortunately, most of them are still practicing. They're still practicing.
Yeah, they're still figuring it out.
Having worked for them, I was lucky. I worked for very good doctors. I worked for very good pediatricians. But the truth is, there are a lot of them out there that need to go to school again. And a lot of them don't get training in, vitamins or health or any, eating right. A lot of them don't really talk about that, and that's a lot of things would help. If kids talked about these things now, and when they get older, they would have less diseases, I think, sometimes, because they would have more healthy eating habits. That's what Jamie Oliver tries to do. He's, I don't know if you know who that is, but he tried to get it in the schools where kids were eating better. And then it was costing too much money, so they go, well, I guess we have to go back to junk again. And that's, those are some of the things that need to be changed, but maybe someday they will. I'd like to see
that. Well, books will help that. We have books on those, and it will help. We'll drive that home. So here's a question for you, talking about, how things are constantly changing, we're constantly learning. When I first started writing, gosh, now it's been 8 years ago. God, it feels like forever. And it hasn't been. But when I was starting to get into, the young adult market and stuff of writing, the thing I heard back then, and I still hear it echoed, actually, even now, 8 years later, is, and this is with picture books, that nobody wants rhyming picture books. What's hilarious, and the reason why I bring this up, is I actually was just at the library the other day with my 2-year-old, and we checked out 2 books. And they're picture books, of course. And what's funny about it is they're not your typical rhyming picture book. Like when people hear rhyming picture book, they go, oh, Dr. Seuss. And it's not like a Dr. Seuss type rhyming picture book, because heaven forbid anybody try and attempt that, because he's such an icon. But they do rhyme where, the last word in each sentence rhymes, they all rhyme and fit with each other. And then, like, the very, very last sentence doesn't rhyme. One of the books was called She Did It. So it rhymes, like, the whole thing. It goes through, like, four sentences where those four sentences rhyme. And then you get to where, because it's the mom's making a comment about, like, the house, like, a room being a mess. So, like, those four sentences will rhyme. And then, of course, it's the four sisters. Their responses, of course, they'll point at each other and go, she did it. So that's where the rhyme gets broken. But it's still rhyming. So it's like, I think rhyming picture books, even though people are saying, oh, you shouldn't write one, you can do it. It's just you have to do, like, this unique new way of doing it,
You don't even have to do unique. You know what you have to do? You have to get it self-published because the publishers don't want it. The kids want it.
No, these are well, and this other one was just published this year by HarperCollins, and it's flat out straight rhyming. I kid you not. Two sentences, you know, rhyme. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure with, like, I have heard that you're supposed to, that publishers are frowning on rhyme books, and that unless you have really impeccable rhyming, they're not going to take on your book. But every book that my daughter loves is a rhyming book, and so I don't know if the publishers are listening to the kids that actually read the books, because my daughter loves rhyme books. And I tried to write, when I wrote Beans Dragons, I tried to write it out of rhyme and just tell it as a narrative story, but it didn't have the same feeling as the rhyme did, where I could, you know,
I'm going to send you, you know, Virginia will give me your address, to ship your address, because I'm going to send you books, and I'll send you my busy bus, and we'll see what your daughter thinks of that one.
Okay.
You know, kids like that book, and, you know, I do think
it's
kids like rhymes. I've asked librarians,
well,
they
well, here's
like
the thing.
It.
Yeah, and well, here's the thing. My book, Babysitting Sugar Paw, that is actually straight narrative. And actually, I'm a very heavy dialogue writer because when I write short stories, I tend to use a lot of dialogue to move the story forward, because you have, you know, well, like a picture book, very few words. But you also have to get description in, and you don't want to use up your writing with, you know, descriptive paragraphs. So I use a lot of dialogue. So I'm a very heavy dialogue writer, which really shocked a lot of people, because I wrote a picture book that way, which is another thing they tell you not to do, to not have your picture books, you know, a heavy dialogue book. And mine was, and it won an award, and it's just, that's just my talent.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think, you
no,
know,
no,
some
no,
of the rules
saying,
just, right.
But, that's, but yeah. I'm just saying that's another rule. But my point is that just happens to be my strength, so that's why I was able to break that rule and you know, get a book published and stuff. So, again, it goes back to, you know, if you're not a talented person with rhyming, you shouldn't attempt it if you know you can only do roses or red violets or blue, and that's about it. But the thing is, going back to picture books and rhyme, the thing I have noticed is, even if the book isn't straight rhyme, like you would think of, like, and with, like, again, when most people hear rhyme, they think of, like, Shell and Seuss, you know, books. I think the rhythm's important. So even if you are doing a narrative,
you've
got to have a rhythm. And if it doesn't, and it feels choppy, kids aren't going to like it, because that's how they learn to read. They learn through those rhythms. So your sentences have to have a rhythm to them. So it doesn't have to really be – and I think maybe that's the trick. It's not that publishers – because, like I said, both these picture books, one was 2011 and one's 2012, these are new picture books, and they both have rhyme in them, but they're not straight rhyme. But they definitely – where the sentences don't rhyme, there's that rhythm there, you know, where it goes up and down and it flows, and I think that's the key. At least that would be my personal
opinion. Because that's why you have to say it out loud. You have to talk. You have to read them out loud. Because if you lose your breath in between, that line is too long. You know, you have to make it where you just it goes along in a pace. But if you lose your breath while you're saying it, guys do greeting cards, and that's the same kind of thing. Well, they still have the same greeting cards probably from like 100 years ago. They don't even, you know, they need to get some new things. That, you know, I when I go look at them, I'm going like, oh my God, you know, and a lot of them are, you know, just old messages. But, you know, you really do have to have a breath. And if you can't, you know, you just can't be having a line that's so long that you there's no break in there either.
Right.
Yeah,
rhythm.
It goes back to, I always tell everybody to follow the KISS acronym, which is keep it simple, silly, is what I say instead of stupid. But you got to keep it simple.
Yeah.
And it's got to be short. picture book shouldn't be more than 500 words long. I mean, if you're over 500 words, then you're kind of pushing it. But they should be really short.
These are such good tips.
Kids don't have an attention span.
I'm going to say, if it's over 500 words, then I really look at those more as picture storybooks. And then they shouldn't line. They should be straight narrative. And there is more description in the text because it's, you know, usually have a scene-type picture versus the picture telling the story.
Then you can kind of move up to the early reader book.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of like Amelia Bedelia would be a good example of an early reader.
Mm-hmm.
Which
you
my
know,
daughter
I,
likes.
I want to ask you a question about, Virginia, I think I sent you the email. I don't know if I did or not. Maybe I didn't do it yet. I would like to have a show about, having different bookstores come on maybe and try to talk to them and see what they're looking for and why a lot of them have stopped doing some of these, you know, author events and things like that. Because, you know, I'm in the kids market especially. Oh, my God. I mean, kids, this is really important. And the bookstores, you know, even if they're small, they should still do this because it really should be hands-on, these kids, because they're not learning that way. And, you know, and then all the bookstores will be gone, and this is not a good thing.
I agree.
So I think, you know, I don't know if I sent you that email, but I'm going to try to see if we could get some, you know, bookstores, not the bigger chains, the littler bookstores, you know, the smaller bookstores, maybe they'll come on and tell us what, you know, how they feel about all this.
Yeah.
Right now there is a huge focus in the school systems for literacy because the literacy in children is so low. And I think it's because they're not getting what they used to get. They're not starting with the fundamental basics of picture books and then gradually going up to the middle readers and then, you know, the smaller chapter books and stuff. And I think that's where us as writers really need to try to help these small bookstores, you know, any type of bookstore, get more events going on, do events at the library, get the kids reading and love reading so that we can have a literacy, you know, our children with high literacy levels instead of the low that we have right now.
You know, I've asked books libraries. They go like, "Oh no, we can't put you in the budget." I go, "I'm willing. I'm doing it free. I'll do it free. I don't care. This is what it should be, free." So, and then they go, "Oh well, I don't know." You know, I mean, that's not a good answer because I'm offering free. Okay, so what is that about?
Well, and
there's
even grants, and I know this is just because we're putting this conference together for writers down here in St. George. There are so many grants out there for libraries and schools to get authors in that, you know, the grant pays for, we'll literally pay everything for the author to come in, you know, and it'll cover all their expenses for it. So there really is no excuse, and I agree. And it's sad because there's a lot of authors who are starting to shy away from the, I shouldn't say young adult. Young adult market's booming because it's novel writing and, you know, it's just you're writing for your teens or your young adults, and
but you
got to
start them out.
But unfortunately, that's right. I mean, and the reason why I want to have shows because I don't want to discourage people from trying to write picture books because, you know, again, it is one of the hardest type of book to write.
Yeah,
yes,
but
it's
the most needed book out there.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
The beginning. It's where kids get. I kid you not. I mean, I remember all the Golden Books and the Little Critter books. Those are what I grew up on. And then after that, I graduated into the Choose Your Own Adventure books, which is sad because they don't even continue those anymore. I've seen them come back. They're republishing them. Well, the Choose Your Own Adventure, they're republishing them with new covers and stuff. So they're back on the market, but I haven't seen any new stories, at least. And maybe I'm wrong because I haven't really looked
at. They need to be freshened up.
Absolutely.
I love those books, and that's when I really got hooked into reading was the Choose Your Own Adventure, because you got to pick what happened, you know. So besides learning to read, you were also learning what, you know, literally the whole, you know, consequence, you know, by your actions and choices.
Well, that's
because,
that's why we have this on Saturday. We have the show, you know, the one that JD and Christy did.
Oh, yeah,
and
Story Time
Gather Around. We really believe in this, and they're reading children's books. I don't know if you know about Magic Block. I'm going to call Magic Block still, but I don't know, Mikey, if you know about that, but that he wants kids to read, and it's called Magic Block's It's MagicBlox, I think it was. And we've had him on the show a couple times, but I'm going to actually try to get him again because he really wants it too. They're all young, good children's, very good books. And, you know, I know Virginia will agree with me. Like, when we first started doing shows, Virginia, like 2.5 years ago, and there were so many children's authors that we had, it was like there was never enough time to interview everybody. Now I don't even see half of them. They gave up, and I feel this is why I do what I do, because I hate that happens, you know. And I really think that what we're trying to do here today is try to maybe reinterest people in coming back out there. They were very good books. They just I noticed now they've just disappeared, a lot of them. And I knew it would happen because there's not, you know, you have to really be positive. And if you get some negative, people go, you know, right away they end it. But you can't. I mean, you have to keep going no matter what, because if you really love to write, you should write. And there is an audience for everybody. And with self-publishing, it's possible. Not, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world.
My reason for doing the show today was to help, you know, because I love everything that you've shared, Mikey, with everybody, was to let them know that, because that's the one thing I've seen. I've seen people write in the picture book genre, and there's only a handful of authors that I know that once they started have actually gone on to do more than just one or two books.
Yeah, yeah.
But most of them only done one or two books, and it's because it is a difficult book to write. But there's, I mean, like I just said, I mean, there's plot lines you mentioned. I'm like, you know, I never thought of that, but that's true. That is that type of a plot line. And it made me get re-energized, like, oh, see, I have more options now. I have more ways to tell stories with picture books than I used to think, and new ways of looking at it. And I think
it's great. I think
that's
we need to have
so
a part
important.
Two. I think we need a part two with Mikey. We need a part two. We need another one. No, we do, seriously, because I think this is giving people, like, answers to questions, and also I'm already going to think, I thought I wasn't going to write a children's book. We're like, oh, I'm going to think I'll just do another one. I was going to do a series. I think I should just keep going on with them. I'm just like everybody else. I do a lot of genres. I know how it feels, you know, if you're rejected, but not anymore. You don't have to feel that way. I mean, it's not the same way as it was. So all those people that when we put this out, don't stop writing. Kids want this. They need it.
Yeah, and I love the fact that we've shared how important, you know, again, you know, these earlier books are for children, you know, and the importance. I mean, as an author, that's the biggest thing. I mean, I don't write because I'm hoping to, like, become rich and, you know, be like, you know, James Patterson or Stephen King or J.K. Rowling. I mean, yeah, it'd be great if I didn't have to worry about my mortgage ever again.
You never know.
I mean, I will be honest. If I never had to worry about my mortgage payment or car payment again, I would be more than ecstatic. However, I do it because I want the generations below me to actually be, you know, I don't want to see our country deteriorate because people aren't getting educated. Which
because,
is why,
you know,
I write.
People
I write
get down because
they're
not selling a lot of books, but truthfully, you know, once a book is finished, it's out there for life, okay? People don't throw books away, they
immortal.
Give them to somebody else.
And you never know who you're impacting, and that's, to me, that means more to me, touching, you know, that's one reason why I write in the kids' market. I mean, this is, you know, I've had people ask me, you know, why do you write in the kids' market? And, you know, I kind of fell into it, but I could have written just within, you know, the different adult genres. I chose children because, not because I had kids, not because I, you know, I just had my second child. I chose the market because I realized seeing those kids' faces, and I can't tell you, I mean, I probably give more of my book away free to kids than
sell
books.
I know.
Because it is so exciting to see them get so excited to have that book and to read the book and tell me why they like my book versus getting the check. I mean, in all honesty,
it is.
That
it's
means
really,
more
it's
to me.
Great.
Yeah.
Yep. It is good. I mean, and that's the thing, you know. I mean, that's why, you know, when we have shows like this, and Mikey is a great example of this, because the basics are still important. So if, you know, you wrote a children's book and you might not be as successful as you like, if they listen to this show, they may change some of their thinking, and maybe the next book will be the one that really does it.
Yeah. Is there anything else, Mikey, you'd like people to know with picture books and to not get discouraged and getting started, or, you know, even reattacking their career?
Right.
Well, I get discouraged every now and then, but I have to remember that I can't give up.
We all do.
I sometimes want to just give up and take the easy route, but I have a quote that I have on my computer that is from James Owen, who he's an author illustrator that I love, and he said, never ever sacrifice what you want the most for what you want the most at the moment. And if you want most at the moment just to give up, you're going to sacrifice what you want really the most. And so never give up. With writing picture books, just read a lot of picture books and read them out loud and find kids to read them to, because you will come up with so many ideas reading picture books and seeing what the kids enjoy listening to and reading, that you will really boost yourself and help yourself become a better writer. But never give up.
Yeah, I think that's really
great.
I do. You know, that's why we can have the show again, because I would, you know, to learn some other things, because these are very important tips that you gave that we really never really share with people, and, you know, or ever thought, maybe not thought of them ourselves. It's, you know, and I think the way you know, your plot line and that, you need a plot line, and I think when you're writing a children's book, you sometimes don't think, you just think, oh, they'll just, it's not. Children are very fussy about what they like.
Mm-hmm. It needs to be a story, and plot is story. It has to be a story.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is
great.
Mikey,
it's been great having you on the show.
Yes,
can you share your blog address? Because I know on your blog address you share a lot of what we talked about today, because I've been on your blog and...
my blog is writtenbymikey.blogspot.com.
All right. Well,
share a lot of those tips.
Yeah,
it's been
do.
Awesome being on your show. I've enjoyed talking to you. It's
great
meeting you, Marsha, on the
phone.
Same
here.
And
I'm gonna send your kids the book
to you,
and I want your opinion. I want you to tell me what your daughter say about it, and I won't hurt my feelings. Okay, I'm gonna send them.
Yeah,
out
I'll get you the contact information.
Okay,
thanks, Mikey, and we'll stay in touch, because you're only like 5 hours north of me, so I know we'll definitely need to stay in touch, because I know we'll be crossing paths since we're in the same genre together. So,
have
a great
I put his blog on my blog. I put the whole thing, my keys on.
Okay.
You know, it's really, and it's on MarshaCasperCook.com. If you go into Marsha's blogs, you go into the kids part, you know, Marsha's kids blogs, because there's a lot of information on
Yeah,
blog,
and I'll get it up on the World of Ink Network blog too today.
Yeah.
All the information, so you can follow Mikey and learn more about
him.
Well,
you've been great. I mean,
you said
a lot of stuff that I think will help people, a lot of information.
Yeah.
Thank you. I hope so. That's my goal, to help others.
Well,
right, thank you.
So let's see. We're almost to the weekend. So Saturday, which is the 22nd, we have It Storytime Gather Round,
mm-hmm.
which I didn't. Do you know who the author or authors are that are coming on that show, Marsha?
Let me just. You know, I wrote it. I put it out, and I just, let me see something, because you know. It's such a good show, and it's really picking up a really good audience. Okay.
Yeah, that's what J.D. Holiday and Christy, I always want to get her last name wrong. It's Condoleo, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I kind of say it real fast because I don't think I have.
I know. I don't know why I get hooked up on it. I think it's like the state of Colorado pops in my head, because, you know, it just does. That's how I like remember what her last name is, and so then I want to say Colorado, and it's not as Colorado.
They're having there's two authors on. Billy's Family by Eric Thomas Marshall? Thomas Ma. And the second one is Elizabeth Bernaski. And these are cute. They're inky. Oh, this is so cute. It really looks good. Inky is very cute. Oh, it looks great. It's going to be a good show.
Yeah. The book covers looked amazing. So,
anyway,
that will be at... 10 Eastern is when that show airs here on the World of Ink Network. So, and it's such a great show. They don't do it every Saturday, but
three Saturdays
a month.
Yeah.
And it's just a really great time to get, you know, to get the kids and have them sit down and hear a story read to them. And I always mention that, you know, I do that because when my kids are sitting there at my laptop listening to it at the kitchen table eating breakfast, I can actually get chores done around my house.
Yeah, no.
it's beneficial many ways. So, yeah. But it's also a good time to, you know, sometimes I actually sit there and listen to it later with my kids, you know.
Yeah, because they're really doing, you know, they're picking up a really steady audience, which is good.
Yeah, and you get to hear about authors and books that maybe you, because again, like I said, there's so many picture books and early chapter books and early readers out there on the shelves that it's hard to know what's a good book or not. So this is a really great way to find an author and a book that your kids will like that you can then go buy and know that they really like it. So it's a great show. So that's it, Storytime Gather Round. And then we have – do you have a show Tuesday or no show Tuesday?
No, but, yeah, Fran Lewis has
no show
a show
Tuesday.
On the 27th with Tess Garrison, who is absolutely – she's the her of Rizzoli and Isles.
Right.
She was the originator of that.
And we've
had
her
theory.
On the show once before.
Twice. She's been on twice with Fran.
Yeah.
Twice, yeah. And she's great. You know, she was a doctor. She's now a really very super-duper writer. She does a great job, and she's very interesting. And she'll be on at 4 p.m. on our station at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, and it's on September 27th.
Right, and then
she's a good writer.
Wednesday, which is, I think, that's the 26th. So the day before Fran's show, because Fran's show is on Thursday. So the 26th, we have the Family Matters show. I have to get that actually in the system. I don't have it in yet, all the details, because we just ironed it out. The Family Matters show is going to actually be a really good show, because we knew what we wanted to talk about, but we had to, because it was such a broad topic, we needed to narrow it down. That's why it's not live where everybody can see it. But we're going to actually talk about homecoming and proms, basically formal dances for high school students. And the reason why we're going to talk about it is because so many things happen for homecoming and, of course, toward the end of the year for the proms, the junior, senior proms.
Yeah.
And we're not just going to talk about, you know, ways to get, you know, ready for it and, like, budget shortcut ideas. We're actually going to even tackle the issues. My son actually just had homecoming last weekend, which is why the topic came up, because a lot of schools are either getting ready or just had their homecoming. And my other line's beeping. Kids are making a day out of it. They are basically starting off in the afternoon.
Yep.
My phone's dying. Gosh, that's weird. Sorry, guys.
And the dresses are out of it.
Well, we're going to talk about dresses. We're going to talk about the dresses girls are wearing, but my son, his friends, they got together at 10 a.m. in the morning, and from 10 a.m. to when homecoming ended was how long they were gone. I mean, they, of course, came home and got dressed for homecoming and then headed it back out the door. But, I mean, they're making it a huge day, and as great as that is that the kids are getting together and doing that, it also leaves opportunity to have not good things happen, and because they don't have the supervision around, because they are older. So we're going to be tackling that, just the pros and cons of those dances and what parents need to be aware of. Even if you have good kids, believe it or not, sometimes good kids stray once in a while, and those are usually the two dances, those things can happen where you get a straying kid. So that'll be a really good show on Wednesday next week. So the Family Matters show, and that is at 6 p.m. Eastern time. So
tomorrow's your birthday. All right.
Yeah, tomorrow's my birthday, so I will be.
Oh, you know, we forgot
relaxing.
Julie. Julie's on next week.
Yes, Julie's on next week too.
I better write
on Friday. On Friday, yes. We'll be having Julie will also be a returning guest.
Yes. We have some very interesting shows coming up, you know, to help people with their, you know, writing skills and what to do. Because I think that's what's happening. People are just out there. They don't know what to do anymore.
Right.
You know, and that is what's happening out there.
Yeah. So those are our shows, and we thank everybody for listening. We wish you all a safe, happy weekend since it's almost here. And again, thank you, Mikey, for coming
your birthday,
on.
Okay.
All right.
Your all right. Have a good birthday. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Follow me to the world of ink.